your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to be reviewing and talking about the Office of the Inspector General's report that concerned the Justice Department and especially the FBI. And it was hard-hitting on James Comey. And we're going to be playing some different opinions and audio clips from a number of different people. The report just came out. It's well over 500 pages long. It has certain statements in there that there is no evidence of political bias, but the whole report is concerning a lot and a bunch of political bias. This first clip we have is Tucker Carlson interviewing Kim Stoessel, writing for the Wall Street Journal, and she's written some very hard-hitting, escapades and different articles on this tremendous scandal. Here we go right now.
Well, it's been only a little over 24 hours since the massive DOJ Inspector General's report, over 500 pages, was released, and the public is still digesting what's in it. What are the key takeaways, and what is the press missing from all of this? Kim Stoessel is on the Wall Street Journal editorial board. She's been following the story maybe more closely than anyone in America, and she joins us tonight. What jumped out of this report when you read it, Kim?
So I think one thing, Tucker, is most of the headlines today have been focused on Jim Comey, and there's no question that this was a very damning indictment of his leadership while he was there. But then again, Democrats and a lot in the media would like to pin it all on him. What struck me was that this report was a searing indictment of the entire FBI and its culture. And in particular, this argument that they tend to live by a rule that they themselves craft, that they impose rules on everyone else, but they do not live by them. So, I mean, we have examples in here of, you know, employees using their home computers and cell phones for work business. We found out that Comey's entire staff was complicit in helping him conceal from his Department of Justice superiors the contents of that July press conference about Hillary Clinton. We have unauthorized contacts with the press. We have an assistant attorney general, Peter Kadzik, who not only was tipping off the Clinton team about internal things while he was working on the investigation, but then when he was made to recuse himself, did not abide by the recusal. We've got Andrew McCabe leaking and then lying about it to the FBI agents who questioned him. So this is a widespread problem, at least in the leadership across the FBI, and that was an important aspect of this report that's being missed.
It's absolutely being missed, but you didn't miss it. Kim Stoessel, thank you for that.
Thanks.
Coming up next is Dan Bongino, and we're going to give a little few comments about Kim Stoessel's statements, and then also Dan Bongino's statements also at the end of Dan Bongino's announcements and pronouncements. Here we go with Dan right now.
Well, yesterday's report from the IG also reveals that President Obama was one of 13 people who had direct contact with Hillary Clinton on her private email address. Previously, you remember, back in 2015, the then president claimed he only learned of the private address when it became known to the public, and that apparently was a lie. Maybe you're surprised, maybe you're not. Dan Bongino was a former Secret Service agent and an NYPD officer, and he joins us tonight. It seems to me, Dan, that the portion of this report that is being ignored that is very interesting is the part at its core on the Hillary investigation. And we've learned that a lot of things we suspected were true really are true.
They were. But Tucker, the most damning revelation, I think you just nailed it, is the Barack Obama receiving emails from Hillary Clinton's personal, not state.gov account, which she didn't have. Now, quick thing on this. The White House Communications Agency, WACA, that's responsible for President Obama, now President Trump's communications, had to whitelist that email address, Tucker. In other words, somebody had to tell WACA, hey, put that personal email address in Barack Obama's phone. Who told them? Are you still going to stick to this story, Barack Obama and team, that you had no idea Hillary had a personal email account? Plausible deniability here is gone and out the window.
So what you're saying is, by definition, because of the way it was set up, Obama and the people around him had to have known that this was an email system outside the government chain.
Tucker, there is no way around it. You think Barack Obama on his personal BlackBerry was getting, you know, spam emails about a flower sale for Mother's Day? Those emails had to be whitelisted before they even hit the BlackBerry, meaning somebody gave WACA that email address and said, hey, this Hillary Clinton personal one, don't worry, this one's A-OK. Who's the person who did that?
Amazing.
You think Obama didn't know? I mean, the Pravda media will cover for him, I'm sure. But it's ridiculous. The story's absurd. Obama couldn't have been telling the truth.
No, clearly lying. That's why he didn't respond to any of my emails when he was president. Dan Bongino, great to see you.
See you, buddy.
Coming up next is Larry O'Connor, writing for the Washington Times. And he has some very, very sharp analysis of the angles, some angles on this Inspector General's report. So listen carefully. These are very, very good insights for very, very sharp-minded people, very, very good people. So listen to this carefully. It's coming up right now.
Larry O'Connor writes for the Washington Times and is a keen observer of the insanity unfolding around us. He joins us tonight. Larry, what did you make of the coverage of this?
Tucker, I thought about it all day, and I finally figured it out. Go back to the O.J. Simpson trial, all right? The media in D.C. and in Manhattan, they're the jurors. All right. We've all been watching and we've seen all the evidence. We've seen the DNA. We know it's all. We've seen the text messages and everything. It's obvious the truth here. But the jurors, the glove didn't fit. So he's not guilty. And that's what the media is doing here. They're looking at one little thing and that's all they care about. And it gives them and completes the narrative that they want. And the rest of us are sitting around saying, what are we missing here?
Wait a second. You're saying that Chris Cuomo is one of the OJ jurors?
I believe he was, yes. No, that's not true. No, but they're acting that way. And by the way, Chris Cillizza in that CNN clip, he's trying so hard, isn't he, to make sure that everybody believes that there's no there. Because this assumption that Peter Strzok in some way didn't exercise his bias to influence the case is completely unbelievable for anybody who's observing. And let's be clear here, because they're being disingenuous when they repeat that statement. What the Inspector General, Mr. Horowitz, said is not that there was no political bias influencing this investigation, Tucker. What he said was he did not find any documentary evidence to prove that the political bias didn't influence the investigation. In other words, Peter Strzok did not write an email to all of his friends and coworkers saying, hey, guys, let's help Hillary and hurt Trump. Here's how we're going to do it. But, you know, the fact of the matter is he doesn't have to say it. You know, if you're in a club, if you're in a room and everyone agrees on something, take, for instance, the U.S. military. It's not like the U.S. military has to have a strategy meeting every day and say, hey, guys, today we're going to defend the nation. It's sort of a given. It's what everyone understands they're supposed to do. And I think that's really what was at play here.
I think the press would like you to stop asking so many uncomfortable questions and just mindlessly absorb what they tell you. So if you could do that, we'd be grateful. Larry, thank you.
I'm not going to do that, Tucker. I'm sorry.
Have a great night.
The FBI and other Justice Department officials were meeting, having dinner together, talking about how to get rid of Trump during the campaign and while even after he became president. I mean, this thing is scandalous. But your people like Schiff out there from California, Representative Schiff, is saying he's picking up their little jewels in the report that says something about no evidence of political bias. The whole thing is about political bias. And so that's what we're up against. We're up against a gigantic propaganda machine that you could say is controlled by the deep state that favors Hillary. And they're lambasting Trump. Trump plays into their deal. He'll make offhanded remarks, you know what I mean? And they'll just seize upon that and then twist and turn it into some kind of a crazy statement. And that's where Trump needs to be more guarded in his statements to the press, because they just love him to. They love when he's on the way to the helicopter. Or the other day he went out. He's getting better to and more guarded. It seems like in making statements that are less able to be used in a derogatory or negative way against President Trump. So he's learning while he's in office, but he's done so much this first plus 500 plus days in office. And coming back from the Singapore with a meeting with the president of North Korea, that was a big plus. He deserves the Nobel Peace Prize if this works out like we hope that it will. We want peace in there. We want peace in the world. And I think that's what Trump wants too. But there are people out there in the munitions industries and so forth. They don't want peace anywhere in the world. I mean, they're making millions into the billions of dollars of selling arms and so forth. And so they're happy in keeping the tensions going and the war making going. So that's what really what we're up against. And it's just devastating, you know. We've got a quote here, a statement by Lou Dobbs. This is coming out at the end of the week, just yesterday. And he's making a very, very, about Trump's promises made and promises kept. But listen to Lou Dobbs. He is a really fine broadcaster. And he used to be on the other side of the fence or the other with the enemy at one time, but he's always done a good job no matter who he's worked for or worked with. Now he's part of Fox, and he's got a better home now than I think he's ever had. But listen to Lou Dobbs. He's really a fine and outstanding gentleman and a real scholar in this political jungle that we have, and that deep state continues. It's more like Spectre. Now the international specter is trying to get rid of Trump. So listen to what Lou Dobbs has to say, and here we go right now.
Up next, the president's list of accomplishments. Robe of the day, the mainstream left-wing national media refuses to give him any sort of usual critics and relentless opponents and enemies, whether the Dems, the Rhinos, the national left-wing media, or the deep state. No matter, this president has demonstrated over and over that he can handle all of them, and all at the same time, if need be. Look at what's happened since he took office. The FBI and its director intended to make Hillary Clinton president of the United States. How did that work out? The FBI and the Justice Department intended to stop Trump's presidential bid and stop it cold. They failed, and they failed miserably. And President Trump has succeeded, and succeeded in extraordinary terms. He has, in less than a year and a half, become a historic president. So successful that it's ludicrous to try to list his achievements because there are so many, and the list grows by the day. And on the same day that he and his administration announced tariffs on $50 billion of Chinese imports, President Trump makes it clear that he won't support a wrong-headed, weak-kneed immigration bill supported by so-called moderates in the House, read Schumer-like liberals. One of two bills headed to the floor that Rhino Ryan wrote behind closed doors. Unfortunately, a second bill created by the same lame duck speaker who created the Schumer-like liberal bill. The same Rhino who represents only the establishment interests of the globalists, the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the Koch brothers, and Wall Street. You know, the ones who created most problems. They own Rhino Ryan, and here they come again. President Trump is to be credited for his demand to solve the immigration issue. But Congress isn't solving the illegal immigration issue, and surely isn't securing our borders with this legislation. There has been, I will remind everyone, no debate on this legislation. It was written, if you will, in the dark of night. No amendments. The bill crafted, well, not even near the light of day. In fact, Ryan's Congress is no more open and participatory than Russia's Duma. That's the way the establishment wants it. Perhaps, by the way, less than the Duma. President Trump tweeted that any immigration bill must have the full funding for the wall in catch and release, visa lottery and chain migration, and go to merit-based immigration. Go for it, said the president. The president assured voters in 2016 in the campaign that there would be no amnesty, that he would secure the border, that he would build the wall. Paul Ryan has declared he wants open borders, unrestricted immigration, and has opposed President Trump at almost every turn in his short time in office. And he has betrayed the president at almost every opportunity presented. Now, this is the pivotal moment for the Republican Party and perhaps for this president as well. If Ryan and his rhinos have broken the president's promise to build the wall, if Ryan and his rhinos have their way on open borders and continued chain migration at any level, any form of lottery visas, and further deceives both the president and his voters, Ryan will have betrayed the president and the party, and most likely will have destroyed the Republican chance of holding their majority in the House. Promises made, Mr. President. Promises made. Please keep your promises. Keep your promises. You know that's the only course that serves the national interest and the tens of millions of Americans you promise not to forget. Nothing you could do would break their hearts sooner or any more than to break that promise. Nothing you could do would give greater comfort to the Dems. Nothing you could do would give the Dems greater advantage in the upcoming midterms than for you to break that promise. Nothing would do more harm. We all have faith in you, Mr. President. Promises made, promises kept.
Well, you know, President Trump has been pretty well with his promises. His foreign policy, I think, especially in the Middle East, for me, has been wanting. But anyway, he's done a lot in just a little over 500 days. And so coming up next is Judge Jeanine, sitting in for Sean Hannity. He's coming back from Singapore. Sean Hannity reported live on the scene down there during that summit with the North Korean president and President Trump. But anyway, coming up is this little panel discussion that Judge Jeanine has going. And I thought it to be very, very insightful and rambunctious and just as active and energetic as Judge Jeanine is. But here we go with this wonderful panel discussion. Here we go right now.
And joining us now to react to Kristen's report, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton, former Clinton pollster and advisor Mark Penn, author of the upcoming book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. All right, Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett. All right, guys, I'm going to start with you, Greg. I mean, you know, we're sending now this guy Manafort to jail, claiming the judge is saying that he actually tried to tamper with a couple of witnesses.
Right.
Why is he in jail and the rest of these bozos not?
Well, that's a very good question, and the judge should be blaming herself. She is the one who failed to issue a no-contact order with regard to any witnesses. And I've read through the court documents. Andrew Weissman and Robert Mueller's evidence of this is incredibly scant and cryptic. It is enough to revoke bail because that's an incredibly low threshold.
Right.
But they also are charging him with obstruction of justice
exactly.
In a superseding indictment. That's utterly preposterous given the evidence.
But Greg, look, you and I both know that for them to do this, they indict him again, superseding indictment, they start threatening him, and now they throw him in jail. They must be desperate because this is a guy who's charged with a crime that occurred 12 years ago that half the people in Washington who are lobbying should be in the same lockup with him. What do they think he has on Trump? He only was with him for a few months.
They know he has nothing on Trump, but that has never stopped prosecutors from putting a document in front of somebody that they're squeezing and say, sign this. They don't care, those prosecutors, about the rule of law and perjury. They suborn perjury by squeezing witnesses all the time, and that is a crime.
All right, Tom Fitton, you know, the prosecutor in me and the way I ran an office too, wouldn't allow that kind of thing, but the feds are a different breed of cat. Tom, your take on this whole thing with Manafort being in jail, what do you think they think he's going to say other than perjure himself?
Look, at the anti-corruption watchdog in me suggests this is all this is retaliation by the Mueller team for Manafort's pushing back against his authority.
Yeah,
I think it's overkill, and I think the Mueller operation recognizes that Manafort is its reason for being. There really is no Mueller investigation to speak of substantively without this big Manafort indictment, these multiple indictments now. You shut down the Manafort investigation, and really everything kind of flitters away because the Trump investigation is going nowhere. There is no Russia collusion. And again, it's a nice distraction from that IG report that confirms the Mueller operation was generated as a result of these crooked FBI agents who hated Donald Trump, who set this thing in motion, and were working for Mueller for a good period of time. Frankly, the whole thing's been tainted. I'm thinking back to the Whitehurst scandal with the FBI labs. Throughout all the cases these folks were involved with, including Manafort.
Right, right. Poisonous tree. But you know what's amazing to me, Tom, and you're the one and that I've always given so much credit to for through your FOIA, Freedom of Information. But, you know, now we find out, why was this text never given to Congress? The one where he says, you know, we're going to stop it. He's not going to be president, is he? No, we're going to stop it. I mean, somebody's got to pay for not giving that to Congress.
You know, when you can't blame the Obama Justice Department for that, Judge, it's this Justice Department, this FBI, that's been covering up all these text messages, all these emails. They're fighting us in court right now on every scandal issue the IG has raised.
Yep.
They haven't given us one text message. They haven't given us the McCabe text messages.
Yep.
They're holding back information about DOJ collusion during the Obama administration with the Clinton campaign. This Justice Department, not the Obama Justice Department.
Yeah. All right. So, Mark Penn, I mean, what, as you listen to this, and what Tom Fitton says is absolutely the case. This is the Republican Justice Department.
Well, but it's really a state unto itself. I think what's happened here with the recusal and the independent counsel and Rod Rosenstein is that they're not accountable to Congress. They can't be fired by the president. They've kind of come in and created a government of their own here, which we thought when we got rid of the independent counsel statute could no longer happen. And absolutely. And look, you see what's happening with Manafort. I mean, you look, Weinstein is out on $1 million bail.
Harvey Weinstein, right.
Right. Madoff, $10 million bail. Now tell me, what league is Manafort in? The judge here is in cahoots with the independent counsel to pressure Manafort to the limit because he's the only guy pleading not guilty.
You know, I got to tell you something, Mark. I mean, that obviously is very interesting. But as the public has watched this whole thing proceed, who would think if Manafort turned on the president now that anything he said had any truth to it, given the fact that they've been squeezing him for a year? But I'm going to go to you, Greg, on this whole thing with the FBI. Yeah. Now, right now, Horowitz is going to testify on Monday.
Yes.
He's going to try to maybe, you know, explain why, in spite of these prejudicial statements, the report and the actions are not sufficient to call for a criminal charge against anyone.
What he needs to say is, look, I couldn't prove that their bias influenced decisions.
Well,
I couldn't prove
Greg, look at this. I got to show you this. This is proof. It's called 500 pages of proof.
Look, it is a compendium of bias, if you will. But the Horowitz said, look, did it influence the decision to clear Hillary Clinton? I can't prove it through testimonial or documentary evidence. Well, of course he can't. Nobody puts their crimes in writing. Nobody confesses to Horowitz, we did it for political reasons and obstructed justice.
This is crazy. This is crazy. Tom Fitton, I tried a lot of murder cases with absolutely no eyewitness testimony. It's called circumstantial evidence. This is more than circumstantial. This is what people are saying. They are describing what their state of mind is.
Well, you know, unfortunately, the inspector general is a typical government bureaucrat. He sees the set of facts that everything that Hillary Clinton did, all of these decisions that the prosecutors made and the FBI made, that fell down in her favor and helped protect her, they all were perfectly defensible, and he couldn't second-guess them. You know, look, I don't buy any of that. People should read the report themselves, and they're going to see a Clinton email investigation that was a sham that should be reopened, and a Russia investigation irredeemably tainted by this anti-Trump bias. I just can't believe we're still talking about a Mueller investigation after after Mr. Strzok said his goal was to stop Trump.
Right. Mark, and last question to you. What happens to Jim Comey's book, A Higher Loyalty Now?
Well, look, I hope sales are cut off. I mean, the whole way he has acted here in defiance, really, when you look at it now, he was in defiance of everyone when he was FBI director. So you'd expect him to be in defiance of everyone now that he's a private citizen. Look, I have thought, and I wrote a piece in the Hill, A Higher Disloyalty. Mm-hmm. I think that he really, you know, brought down the FBI. It's clear to me that Hillary was a winner in this report because they said all the actions were reasonable. I think Trump was a winner because the Strzok tests really show the anti-Trump animus. And I think Comey and the FBI were losers. They didn't operate in a even remotely professional way.
And all right, gentlemen.
He was going to be destroyed by this.
That's
which
why
is,
he ran out and got the book done. I've got to go. That time's up. All right, coming up.
Judge Jeanine is saying that the whole report, okay, that came out was a condemnation of the FBI and the Justice Department in being biased, wholly biased against Trump and trying to undermine his campaign and in his, you know, presidency. Well, what's interesting is Devin Nunes, who heads up the House Intelligence Committee, has already started on the Russian angle on this and the FISA, you know, angle and so forth. That hasn't even been investigated thoroughly at all. And that's going to prove overwhelmingly very, very dangerous. Or these some of these same people that are cited in this report now. So I don't see that anything getting better here. If anything, it's going to get a lot worse. Okay, coming up next is Laura Ingram, the Ingram angle. And she's got a heck of a series of different speakers in these different multiple clips. So, boy, this is great, great stuff. So listen carefully. And then I'm going to come back and quote some passages out of that Inspector General's report. And then also I'll have a few closing comments about the Bilderberg and the Guardia di Finanza, which is a big 78 personnel guarding you could say the top guards in Italy. But we'll come back and say that in a second and feed that in. But here, listen to Laura Ingram and her guest right now.
So much fallout on the day after that bombshell IG report. We have complete coverage from every angle. Also, Raymond Arroyo explains why MSNBC hosts suddenly look like televangelists in the Friday Follies. And in tonight's angle, why all of a sudden the whining about the cult of Trump after 8 years of swooning over the real Messiah, Obama? But we begin with broadsides from Team Trump after the outlandish revelations in the Inspector General's report on the Clinton email investigation. Starting with President Trump's shot at the FBI brass and the chief he fired, of course, Jim Comey. On Fox and Friends this morning, the president took a swipe at what he called the scum at the top of the bureau under Obama.
The IG report came out yesterday. The FBI looks bad.
Very bad.
Your FBI.
It was Comey. I mean, they were talking about Comey, not my FBI. It was Comey. The people in the FBI are incredible. I would bet if you took a poll in the FBI, I would win that poll by more than anybody's ever won a poll. But the top people were horrible. You look at what happened. They were plotting against my election.
Presidential attorney Rudy Giuliani said it's Comey who should be investigated and that the FBI agent should be, quote, fired today and in prison next week.
Let's investigate the investigators. Let's take a halt to the Mueller investigation. Let's stop it. and let's turn it and get rid of all the agents doing the Mueller investigation. The reality is that somebody like that obviously shouldn't be working at the FBI. He's got emotional problems and probably needs Valium or something like that.
Giuliani was referring to Peter Strzok, the FBI agent who vowed to stop Trump from becoming president in a text uncovered in the IG report. Strzok is now facing his own day of reckoning as House Judiciary Chair Bob Goodlatte has begun proceedings to subpoena him. Strzok was the lead FBI agent, remember, in the Clinton email probe, a top agent in the FBI's Russia probe, and the agent who interviewed former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn. He then became a top investigator in Special Counsel Bob Mueller's Russia probe. All that ended, of course, when Strzok's bombastic anti-Trump texts with his lover, FBI attorney Lisa Page, were revealed. Strzok was demoted to the FBI's HR department. That's ironic, which raises the question, why the heck is he still working at the FBI? Especially in light of the text message revealed yesterday where he vowed to stop Trump from becoming president. Joining me now, our former FBI national spokesperson and special agent, John Iannarelli, attorney and RNC committeewoman from California, Harmeet Dhillon, and former Assistant Attorney General Robert Driscoll. All right, I want to start with you, Bob, on this, because it's fascinating to me how when you survey the other networks of the last 24 hours, it was like on to Stormy Daniels. They've spent precious little time on this. Oh, no evidence of bias. This is a big nothing burger. I'm so sick of that word, by the way. But let's remember what Horowitz did conclude, and this is important. Departing so clearly and dramatically from FBI and department norms, the decisions negatively impacted the perception of the FBI and the department as fair administrators of justice. Robert, fair administrators of justice now with a Russia collusion probe gone on for more than a year, about $18 million it's cost, apparently with no end in sight.
Well, I mean, the damage has been done, and I think this report makes it clear that there's rampant bias within the FBI and levels of the DOJ, and it's clear in the report. All the report says, and I think people take this sentence out of context, the report said that Horowitz couldn't link the examples of bias to any particular investigative decision, which, of course, he couldn't. No one generally writes down when they're, you know, doing something that improper. But he found bias, and it's, you know, through all 500 pages, on each page there's more examples of bias, and one text message or email is worse than the next. And so the bias is there. It's just a question of he took a very broad view of essentially if any investigative decision was defensible, not proper, but just defensible, he passed on it. So, I mean, I think it really is, to me, shockingly bad, both the breadth of the report and the breadth of the bias and corruption was, I mean, I think shocking.
Harmeet, Peter Strzok is still collecting a taxpayer-funded salary, which, I mean, I can't believe he's still working, and of all places, in human resources. I mean, that just, like, takes a cake. You can't write how stupid that is. But it looks like Bob Goodlatte does want him to testify on Capitol Hill. Apparently, he's wanted to talk to him for over a year, and he's begun the process, reportedly, of getting that subpoena. It takes 2 days, I guess. The process takes about 2 days. But he wants that. He wants Strzok up on Capitol Hill, and he wants information, and he wants it like yesterday.
Right. And the question is, when you read this shocking OIG report, why he's had this job for so long, Strzok, and, you know, Ray, who the president was praising in his tweets, you know, why they haven't done something about this already. You know, there was evidence of bias. We see the shocking instance of the text that he sent back to his lover about how he wasn't going to let Trump become the president, and that was withheld from Congress. So when you read this report, you can't help feel like, number one, obviously it's a very thorough report and goes into a lot of the shocking bias, but the conclusion is, well, you know, we don't have a smoking gun, so we can't do anything about it. That's the problem all along with an Office of Inspector General investigation. They don't have the power to do anything about it. It's more like an after-the-fact HR, internal investigation as what we can do better next time. And that's not going to cut it here, but the damage that has been done to our country and the damage that is being done with the Mueller investigation, it requires stronger measures than simply an investigation into what went wrong. We've got to do something about it.
John, the damage to the FBI, I think, cannot be overstated here. We have men and women who work so hard in the field offices all across this country, day by day, night by night, to keep Americans safe and do really great investigative work. This ended up being a political oppo research operation against, ultimately against the president with a Russia probe, but a CYA situation with Hillary Clinton and these emails all along. If you actually read this report, and I've gotten through most of it, there is a lot in this report that the press, of course, is conveniently glossing over.
This is a group of individuals. Right. The fact of the matter is that some horrible things were done that should have never occurred. And we have to keep in the context, though. Remember, this is a group of individuals who knew each other. Some were handpicked by their friends to work in this project, if you will. Meanwhile, you have 35,000 FBI employees doing good things every day and not acting biasly. I think it's important that they need to come clean here, and you're right. Whether or not Mr. Strzok should still be working at FBI headquarters is certainly a question a lot of us are asking.
Now, remember, guys, as we said, the IG did not say he found no bias at the FBI. He said that there was no documentary evidence that bias produced specific decisions. And we got to remember, there's another IG report coming down the pike. Well, you call it IG 2.0 if you want. And that could end up being loaded with evidence of such bias, because that's about the looking into the informants that were used in the Trump campaign and maybe these potential FISA abuses, the FBI handling of the Russia probe. So I want to go back to you, Bob, thinking that the IG, again, Horowitz, Trump was kind of annoyed today. He said, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. Then he kind of petered out at the end. That's what Donald Trump said. But this other report could be really important in seeing what happened to place individuals or encourage individuals to try to penetrate these lower level people inside the campaign.
Well, I think it'd be important for two reasons. I mean, one is what you talked about. We'll find the basis for this Russia investigation, whether or not it was the dossier originally, whether or not it was an opposition research generated investigation totally or not. But more importantly, we'll be able to lay it side by side with the IG report that just came out, because it will provide some context. So, I mean, in the Clinton investigation, we have the Clinton IT guy getting granted immunity for essentially nothing, admitting that they destroyed the emails after they're already under subpoena, no prosecution, Cheryl Mills being in the interview with Hillary Clinton as both a witness and a lawyer, Huma Abedin allowed to sit in on the Hillary interview. I mean, all those things, you know, maybe defensible individually in a vacuum, but an incredibly light touch for anyone who's ever gone through an FBI investigation. And then we'll get to compare that in 2.0 to, what do you know? People's houses are being searched at 6 in the morning. Everyone's being charged with false statements, whether or not they're material to any given crime. Yeah. And so I think the second report could have, could be a big deal, because it could fill in some of these gaps, or at least allow us to draw some inferences.
Well, yeah. I mean, guys, they certainly were very zealous in trying to, find this evidence of Russia working with Trump. I mean, getting this professor in London, talk to Papadopoulos, all the stuff that they were trying to do. My goodness, they're, leaving no stone unturned, trying to get a Russian billionaire to help that Oleg Deripaska. I mean, they're doing everything. Meanwhile, with Hillary, it's maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't get the Wiener laptop. Maybe we should wait on that.
Right.
So a totally different approach, which also I think comes through when you really read the totality of this report. Harmeet, Giuliani today talked about the question we've been talking about for months here about whether the president should testify. I want you all to listen carefully to this.
What you think should happen now in the Mueller investigation?
They should end it. I mean, the IG report basically tells you that both prongs of the Mueller investigation are either corrupt or answered.
He went on to say the president should not. He basically said no interview of the president. He shouldn't be bothered with it. Harmeet, any thinking of yours that's changed from the beginning of a possible perjury trap for a president who, I mean, President Trump likes to talk. He's very affable. He loves to get his point across. He didn't do anything wrong, he says. So he's like, I'm happy to talk. He wants to talk. But as a lawyer, and I'm a lawyer as well, how dangerous is it for him to go into that special counsel's office?
Okay, Laura, so as to the first part of your question, does it change anything? No. From day one, I thought the president shouldn't talk. You and I both know that federal prosecutors are not just, you know, regular prosecutors. They're the gunners. You know, they're the go-getters. They're the ones who want to make their case and make their name. There's no bigger prey than the president of the United States. So he should not go in there because there's no confidence that the deck won't be stacked against him. We've seen that with Flynn. We've seen that how Strzok has behaved in many other instances. Yeah, you know, but in terms of witnesses, a CEO, a powerful person, is the worst witness. Anybody can tell you they're the worst witness because they're used to getting their way. Everybody in the room sucks up to them. And it's just a totally different scenario when you're talking even seemingly casually to a prosecutor or an FBI agent. So it would be a big mistake for any CEO, for any president, but particularly for this president.
Yeah. Well, even this is going for a legal showdown.
And now we've seen the corruption pervading the FBI.
Yeah, like that's what Giuliani's point was. Giuliani's point today was, now that we've seen, we know just what was going on in there with the desperate effort to stop him from becoming president. And Cheryl Mills gets to sit in there when they're talking about whether they should subpoena Hillary. All that, you know, the cozy relationship between the press and the FBI agents. The press are giving perks to the FBI agents. They don't know where these leaks came from. It's totally out of control. And I want to go back to you, John.
It's corrupt.
Because we have John Dowd, who exclusively gave us a comment tonight about what this IG report actually says. He said the clear evidence, John Dowd, former, of course, lead counsel for Trump, the clear evidence of his usurpation of power, violation of his oath of office, and material false statements to the public and Congress, all to conceal his own misconduct, warranted a criminal referral of Comey's conduct. The finding of no bias was ludicrous. The OIG's findings support the president's decision to fire Comey, John.
Absolutely. Comey was fired because of the things that he had done, and the president was right to step forward and take those actions. I also think a lot of things have been made out of the fact that the president fired a director of the FBI. It's not unprecedented. We saw it with William Sessions back in the early 90s, where he was fired by a Democratic president, President Clinton. There were firings of FBI directors before then. But this is clearly, based on the report we're seeing, gives good cause and justification for the actions the president took.
I've tried to present some different angles, Laura Ingram angles, Butler's angles. But anyway, I've tried to bring you some very important quotes from a lot of different, very, very important, upstanding people. And some are former Secret Service, some are writers, some are reporters for different news organizations. But anyway, they're very, very interesting. Now, next, I'm going to be quoting some passages out of the actual report and give you a little of my insights into what I think they say. And then I'm going to make a few comments about this last Bilderberg meeting, which took place in Turin, Italy. But coming up is right now with some of these quotes. And let me get that thing up and running here, and I'll start reading some of those quotes to you. Okay, here's the first passage out of it I'm going to read to you. To quote this directly from the report, we further found that the statute that required the most complex analysis by the prosecutors was Section 793F1, the gross negligence provision that has been the focus of much of the criticism of the declination decision. As we describe in Chapters 2 and 7 of our report, the prosecutors analyzed the legislative history of Section 793F1, relevant case law, and the department's prior interpretation of the statute. They concluded that Section 793F1 likely required a state of mind that was so gross as to almost suggest the deliberate intention, criminally reckless, or something that falls just short of being willful. That's important. As well as evidence that the individuals who sent emails containing classified information knowingly included or transferred such information onto unclassified systems. The mid-year team concluded that such proof was lacking. We found that this interpretation of Section 793F1 was consistent with the department's historical approach in prior cases under different leadership, including the 2008 decision not to prosecute former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez for mishandling classified documents. If you go back to reports that came out over the over the several years since this scandal, there is conclusive evidence that they did transfer classified information into unclassified mail server that she was operating. It's overwhelming that she was wrong in maintaining that server to start with. So the report itself goes into all of these different emails and so forth that shows substantial problems that the FBI and the Justice Department had. It goes on to say, we analyzed the department's declination decision according to the same analytical standards that we applied to other decisions made during the investigation. We did not substitute the OIG's judgment for the judgments made by the department, but rather sought to determine whether the decision was based on improper considerations, including political bias. We found no evidence that the conclusion by the prosecutors was affected by bias or other improper considerations. Rather, we determined that they were based on the prosecutor's assessment of the facts, the law, and past department practice. We therefore concluded that the legal and policy judgments involving We therefore concluded that these were legal and policy judgments involving core prosecutorial discretion that were for the department to make. I mean, this is so jumbled with legalistic talk, isn't it? I mean, what do we got here, you know? Just a bunch of mumble jumble. On page 144, we have this. It says that the FBI midterm exam investigation successfully determined classified information was improperly stored and transmitted on Clinton's email server, and classified information was compromised by unauthorized individuals to include foreign governments or intelligence services via cyber intrusion or other means, referring to compromises of email accounts associated with certain individuals who communicated with Clinton's server, such as Sid Blumenthal. However, the structure of the investigation and prosecution team as prescribed in the CDPG and treatment of the investigation as a traditional espionage matter rather than a criminal investigation significantly hindered the ability of the investigative team to obtain full, accurate, and timely information. So, hey, how come it was an espionage versus a criminal? If it had been a criminal investigation, then there'd have to be a criminal referral, wouldn't there? And so they started out with some espionage type of investigation here, which probably concluded in letting off the hook many of the people that were involved, you know. And it goes on, reasonably likely that hostile actors gained access to Clinton's private email server was changed to possible. See, they changed the whole report up. The statement also acknowledged that the FBI investigation and its forensic analysis did not find evidence that Clinton's email server systems were compromised. Oh, by the way, the FBI did not do the forensics. They farmed that out to an outside firm. But they never really told us about that. You know what I mean? We've just got the recent conclusion of the Bilderberg group. And what I ran across was Daily Mail came across just recently today. I think there was an article in Daily Mail out of UK, and they had some kind of reporter in there that gained access to the grounds. And I mean, they made it seem like gaining access to the grounds around the hotel there in Turin was some great you know accomplishment or something. But they had a bunch of photographs up there, you know. So I started looking at the photographs. And I found some very interesting things in the photographs. There were these trucks, these big panel trucks out there. And I started looking at those panel trucks and saying, well, gosh, what exactly are those panel trucks about? And they had on the back of them, Iveco was the name of the company that made the trucks. But up above it says Guardia de Finanza. So I was wondering, what is Guardia de Finanza? What is that exactly? And I started digging down into my wiki, you know, Wikipedia here, just to gain something about it, just to get sort of an idea about what in the heck was that all about. See, And I came up with some very, very interesting things in the sense that this is a very, very large, organization in Italy. It has 68,000 personnel, okay? And those personnel are combined, you could say, with from the local level all the way up to national. And they do a lot of like border guards and things like that. And they have ships, and they have all kinds of airplanes. And anyway, it is a militarized police force forming a part of the Ministry of Economy and Finance. It's not part of the Ministry of Defense. It's also evolved into Italy's primary agency for suppressing the illegal drug trade. It maintains over 600 boats and ships and more than 100 aircraft to serve in its mission of patrolling Italy's territorial waters. It sounds sort of like the Italian Coast Guard, something like our Coast Guard, see. But anyway, it was there, and it was in force. I mean, it had a bunch of people out there around the Bilderberg Group. And it says some of their missions, see, it's very, very, insightful, some of these articles. The mission, are stated in the April 23rd, 1959, subdivided into so forth. The priority ones are preventing, investigating, reporting financial evasions and violations, overseeing the compliance with the provisions of political, economic interests, and surveillance at sea for financial police purposes. And contribution ones, maintaining public order and safety, political, military defense of the borders. It says here the primary goal of the Guardia di Finanza is to protect the legal economy and the businesses operating in compliance with the law, while ensuring that the Republic, the European Union, the regions, and the local governments can rely on a regular inflow and appropriate use of the resources meant for the community and for supporting policies on economic, social, revival, and development. Its activities connected with financial, economic, judiciary, and public safety, tax evasion, financial crime, smuggling, money laundering, international, and so forth, illegal drug trade, illegal immigration, cuts, and so forth, copyright violations, anti-mafia, credit card fraud, and so forth. You know, it's like we had the fox guarding the hen house here, didn't we? I mean, we had the Guardia di Finanza guarding the Bilderberg Group. Well, that is a biggest joke I've ever seen, isn't it? I mean, and I'm not knocking the average person in the Guardia di Finanza core there. You know, I'm sure there's some very, very good people. But it's ironic that the top level, you could say, law enforcement on multiple levels, but not reporting to the defense department, but reporting to the finance department, you could say, the economic finance people, like the banks. Actually, they're like the security for the banks and stuff, you know, it sounds like to me. Fraud and all that stuff, bank fraud, and it goes on and on and on. And so actually, it looks like that they're the private guardians or guards for the banks, bankers in Italy. But anyway, we didn't get much out of the Bilderberg. We do have an idea that a good part of it was AI. They're always looking for ways to deliver, to control the press and so forth. They're concerned about the Middle East. They don't like Russia at all. They want to maintain a division between President Trump and Putin. If Putin and Trump got together, they might wipe out the New World Order. That's what they're afraid of, see. So that's why they have to continually be down on Trump. And but Trump's recent return from the Singapore summit has made him, he's becoming an international, you could say, figure now after that, because he was able to go out there and shake hands. Now, the thing is, some people say, well, this guy's a tyrant and all that. Yes, he is. And he's done some very, very bad things in the past. But you've got to start talking to these people before you can get any change or make any goals, reachable goals, come about. You have to talk to these people that are in control, persuade them that there are different ways to go about it, and to lighten up on the people don't jail them, don't imprison them, and change it into a much more friendly, benign democracy versus a very, very dictatorial, harsh, cruel dictatorship, which is what it has been in the past. So I've been watching this pretty carefully. Trump had a birthday the other day, the 72nd. He walks out on the grounds of the White House, and Fox and Friends is taping out there. Well, they're live because it's a live program. He goes over and starts talking, and well, he's been on television with that Apprentice thing for years, so he's real relaxed around live type cameras, and all, they tape all this stuff, those programs, of course. But he's getting to be. But now this is where the press comes in, and they'll come in and start asking him questions. See, when he's there, and one question came from one reporter. He said, "Who do you report for?" And the guy said, "CNN," and he jumped on like the worst one around and all that. And CNN has lost much of their audience because they're not reporting. They're not close enough to the truth on these very, very important national, international items and topics. So that has been a real problem. But then the Spectre is out there, and they're controlling the press internationally. And so Spectre's out there talking and putting out there. They've got a bunch of talking heads working for Spectre. That's what this is. And the Bilderbergers are at the top of the Spectre organization. That's what it looks like to me. You have kings and queens and financial leaders of the major Western Europe and American interest there. And then you've got intelligence agents at the top of the intelligence. It looks like a good old boys network with the kings and queens invited too, you know. So we just can't talk about this enough and get to where we can open people's minds. Right now, the American public has been so mesmerized. The people that voted for Trump, they were beginning to awaken. And that's what the top elites in the world are fearful of, that more and more people are waking up to the way that they've been ruled and propagandized. Now, you've got these people on the left that are still worshiping Hillary and Bill Clinton and with all that they've done. I mean, this is where it gets disheartening about people coming out of that mesmerized, propagandized state, because they have been mesmerized, propagandized, and mind-washed into believing that these people are some good. Now, that doesn't leave out the other side. The rhinos out there, they're trying to take out Trump too. So they're not nice, and they haven't been nice to anybody either. So we've got problems on both sides of the aisle, you could say. Right now, one of the little dirty tricks they've been talking about, the children separated in internment camps, or they put them in cages. Well, they went down there, Breitbart did, and toured some of those places that the children are being held. They did have to separate, you know, the adults from the children, but the children are well looked after in some of these places that they're living. So it's not what, you know, these reporters are trying to say, put them in cages and stuff like that. So we've got to take care of the children, and this immigration, this illegal immigration, we've got to go to E-Verify. E-Verify would stop much of this, because then only people that are legal, you know, here, legally here, one way or another, legal, but legally here, can work and get a work permit and remain here. The others have to go back. So anyway, that's the way I look at it. But the employers, they want cheap labor. They just want to work those people for next to nothing and get as much as they can out of them, give them minimum wage or something, you know. That's what they want to do. So anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening this evening. And we'll be back next week with another program and another analysis. And hopefully things will change for the best. We got to love one another and forgive one another and to get on down the road and create a better America. Thank you.